So, again, happy Earth Day, everyone. I suppose I should know more about the history of that day if I'm going to announce it so boldly, but I think it's been around since the 70s, from what I remember looking up maybe a couple years ago. And I sent out on the Facebook page this morning, I just had the whim to send out an invitation for anyone who felt to try meditating under a tree or out in a park a little bit today. Did anyone give it a whirl? Okay. The weather did look a little bit foreboding. The Buddha spent the significant portion of his life intimately connected with nature in a way that I think it's hard for us to really wrap our heads around nowadays, I think. He was said to have been born amidst a grove of trees. He reflected on some early experience as a child, some moments of mindful awareness in a farming field, under an apple tree. He was said to have achieved enlightenment under a Bodhi tree, and he reached Parinibbana, where he final enlightenment, and he died between two sal trees. Throughout his entire life, the stories that have come down and have been passed down in the suttas, the key moments of his life take place in these natural settings, and whether that's maybe some parts of the way that comes down through the stories are, mythical. It's a way to import meaning and depth to these key moments when we attach them to these natural settings and when we attach them to trees. But also, 2,600 years ago in Nepal and India, he probably didn't have the kind of aircon and sturdy walls and modern conveniences that keep us so very insulated from an intimate connection with nature. And so we're going to investigate this a little bit tonight. What is this connection that we can experience with nature? Is it useful? Maybe we don't need it anymore. We've got aircon. We could happily go through probably most of our lives here in a big city like Brisbane without much intimate familiarity with nature and the earth in this way. And so we'll investigate whether that's a gain or a loss or just a change. The suttas, when we read the suttas, besides these key moments in the Buddha's life, we also read just regularly interwoven these comments about the kinds of practice that people engaged in nature. The Buddha and his followers were forever gathering in groves of trees and meditating in the crook of a tree and going to the forest for retreat time. So we can read these stories and see how that strikes us and whether there's a way to imagine what that might look like today. I have a story I was reading about nature and trees a few years ago in my life. I was going through a bit of a tough patch. I was living rough, so my intimate connection with nature was that I was sleeping in alleyways and cardboard boxes and could get rained on at any time or, subject to the elements in a pretty much unpleasant kind of manner. And I remember one day sitting at a bus station surrounded by nothing but concrete no trees. And reading a book by, it was Eckhart Tolle or Deepak Chopra or somebody like this, with the little clever hint that we might like to further our spiritual development by spending a few minutes every day meditating by a babbling brook of some kind, like a live water feature. This was so far from my lived experience at that time in my life that I just felt this surge of anger reading that. I was just tight and hot and pissed off. I thought that was the lamest advice I had ever read about how somebody should turn their life around. And that clearly this person had no idea what it was like to be me and more broadly to live in this kind of city environment and whatnot. I haven't gone back to that book since. I think I have a little grudge against it. It might be really brilliant. I don't know. I know that what I was really angry about at the time wasn't so much whatever that writer had to say. It was the sense of deep and profound disconnection and isolation. I felt a profound severing of my ability to trust myself and my body and my ability to connect with other people and other sentient beings in a wholesome and supportive way. So something about that invitation to find a natural spot in the middle of my downtown Skid Row just touched on that sense of isolation and separation. Where I was living was really just rooted, deeply rooted in what the Buddha taught of being the three poisons, craving and greed, mind, aversion and anger, mind, and delusion and ignorance, mind. Like that was my day, that was where I lived. And because of that, because of how deeply driven I was by my cravings and my anger and my delusion at that time, not only did I not know how to treat myself appropriately, I didn't know how to treat really the environment appropriately. I couldn't see what was around me. I have no doubt that at that point in my life, I would have, you know, flicked a cigarette onto the sidewalk or, I don't know, been a litter bug in some other really terrible way. Like, I just wouldn't have had the ability to know how my actions rippled out to impact the world around me and other beings. And I think this is symptomatic of so much of how we live in our world today. Maybe most of us, most of the time, are doing so in cars and offices and homes and not in really destitute kind of situations. But that impulse to be deeply rooted in our cravings and our greed and this desire to get more and to react with aversion and avoidance to anything that imperils our comfort and our ease, our luxurious lifestyles. You know, we get angry about it when our cars get scratched. And then just this deep ignorance of how interconnected we all are and how much it matters whether we flick that cigarette on the ground or whether we choose more wholesome behaviors. You know, we're all really disconnected like that. And I wonder if there's something about spending time in a more direct and intimate connection with the natural world that can help us re-engage with ourselves and each other in a meaningful way. It can be uncomfortable to be out in nature. I spent a week on retreat in Springwood recently at Bodhichan. It's not like the deep bush, but it's a lovely, lovely wooded area. And I was meditating outside. And I mean, you guys, there's bugs outside and like pokey things. Like, it's not always comfortable. And when we're practicing, it's not always comfortable in our hearts and minds either. There's definitely scratchy, pokey things in there. There can be so much aversion to just the physical, fleshy, earthy experience of these bodies. And when we slow down to practice, that can come into such sharp relief. So I understand why we might rather just stick with the aircon. But when we do that, we're losing something, because along with losing the discomforts, we lose our, I mean, we never fully lose them anyway, we just find new discomforts, but we lose our ability to connect with ourselves and with each other. So how can the Dharma help us re-engage with that in a way that feels relevant and meaningful? Personally meaningful for how we're feeling fulfilled, but also meaningful when we think about maybe actions that we want to take or things that we would want to do that would be protective of the earth or the environment. You know, signing a petition is perhaps lovely, but and maybe has impact, but it's not very personal. And for me, it can be a big, big step to take between going to a protest on some environmental issue and actually changing my behaviors or doing things differently in my life. But we can learn so much from the teachings of the Buddha when we reflect on this relationship that we have. You know, the word dharma itself, you know, some of the translations of it are natural law. You know, the natural order of things. Nature is just baked right in. The Buddha offered nature as a metaphor. Just for one example, in the Simsapa Sutta, we read, at one time, the Blessed One was staying at Kosambi in Simsapa Grove. Then the Buddha, taking a few leaves in his hand, said to the monks, what do you think, monks? Which are more numerous, the few leaves I have here in my hand or those up in the trees of the grove? And the students replied, they said, we're no fools. We can see that you're only holding a few leaves. Those in the trees are far more numerous. Ah, in the same way, the Buddha answered, there are many more things that I have found out, but not revealed to you. What I have revealed to you is only a little. I think it's like this with practicing in nature. You know, there's so much to be revealed there. So much. Equanimity comes up when we practice outside. That call for equanimity, deepening our ability to sit through the bugs and the pokey things. You know, it's such a visceral, doesn't seem very deep or profound. It's just this visceral truth of physical discomfort. And wow, can we keep our seat through it? When I meditate outside, I often think with just profound admiration of the Buddha sitting in whatever natural conditions, you know, the heat of India, he didn't have a cushy zafu to sit on, you know, such perseverance to maintain his equanimity in the midst of just the physical discomforts that meditating in nature can offer. Hey, don't get me wrong, you get the little sweet spots too, right? You get it when it's just right, the temperature's just perfect, there's no bugs. And so we also get to develop this increased attentiveness and mindfulness when we practice in nature. Sounds sound different to me. You know, we can hear the rustling of the leaves and the the bugs, we can smell all of the smells from outside. And yeah, we get to learn some equanimity and attention there. There's a recent book called The Secret Life of Trees, which delves into the science of how trees communicate and how they support each other in community. And it's really lovely. I see you nodding. Yeah. Yeah. They have these little microrhizomal filaments at the very, very tips of their roots that they communicate to each other through. You know, helping in a community of interconnection, helping strengthen each other, sending extra nutrients to nearby tree beings that need more support, practicing this profound kind of generosity and connection that looks pretty good to me and so different than the way most of us will move through our days and evenings in this multi-million person city that we're in. There's something to be learned there. We can learn the tenderness of an open heart when we sit in nature. The Metta Sutta, the loving kindness instructions, were originally given in response to followers of the Buddha who went and sat in a forest and became scared and alarmed. You know, it was difficult and scary sitting out there in the woods. And they came back to the Buddha and said, oh, yeah, we don't want to practice there. We'd rather go somewhere nicer. Thank you. And he turned them right around, set them right back out to the forest and told them to practice radiating kindness out toward any of the spirits or beings or difficulties that surrounded them. And I think many of us can feel that when we're in nature sometimes, that sense of real heart opening and connection and kindness toward all that is around us. Mary Oliver has a quote that pertains to this. She writes in one of her poems, "Love for the earth and love for you, the divine, are having such a long conversation in my heart. Love for the earth and love for you are having such a long conversation in my heart." So, what are some solutions, or how can we apply the Buddha Dharma toward moving toward a more life-sustaining culture, you know, where we can be in that kind of healthy interdependence of supporting each other and therefore supporting ourselves as well? I think it's wise to have a sense of urgency about these things. When we look at the state of the world today, the state of the environmental situation and decisions, meaningful decisions with big ripple out effects that are being made every day, dollars that are being spent every day, often in our names by our governments, and perhaps not in ways that we would endorse. We want to bring this sense of samvega, or urgency. Samvega is the Pali word for it, but it's a sense of wise urgency to this question of deciding what's our role to play here. Bhikkhu Bodhi says that samvega is the appropriate response to the climate crisis. It's not just turning the aircon up a little bit more and going, na, 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 na. The Noble Eightfold Path offers beautiful teachings on how we can approach this. We begin with wise view, you know, really not only getting the information that we need to understand our choices, but also really checking what our perspective is. Sometimes perhaps we feel overwhelmed and angry and like we really need to tune out, and that's okay. But we want to be clear that when that is our view, And also be clear that that's not a place to stay if we want to be whole participants in the healing of ourselves and our world. Wise speech is a clear place that we can be active. For some of us, again, that means the protesting or the writing the letters to the editor. I'm an inveterate letter to the editor writer. I just come by honestly, my mother did it too. I just write them and I say, hey, that ad you ran, or you know, that. I don't know whether it makes any difference. Sometimes it does. Sometimes I get the replies and it seems to have made a difference that I chose to use my words like a big girl in that way. Other times it seems to just go into a void. But it's a way of taking action, you know, the next step, this wise action that is appropriate for me. You know, it's a way for me to extend not only from my own sphere but out into the world that makes sense for me. Other people will never write a letter to the editor, and that's totally okay. There's probably some other sphere in which you can use your voice to create those positive changes. Renunciation or nekama is almost never a popular topic because renunciation. But this is I think we can't duck our heads from that when we're thinking about our personal practice and how we're living ourselves, and then how that ripples out to affect others. And it can be on so many levels, but it's one of the, you know, core teachings that the Buddha offered again and again and again. And he was not teaching in a context of climate crisis, but nonetheless, this invitation, we have to check our greed and craving and how we act out on that for our own health and well-being. This is an important place to bring attention and to practice letting go. And when we apply that to our decisions that we make in regards environmental issues, you know, this is where it starts to percolate in at a personal level. It might mean doing things we don't really want to do, changing our diet and eating less meat, or having to run back upstairs to get the damn reusable water bottle again because we forgot it going out the door, and then we remembered, and it's like, well, I could just keep going and buy another plastic bottle when I get to my destination, or I could slow down and run upstairs. And, you know, sometimes it's one, sometimes it's the other. But oftentimes that step of renunciation calls for us to let go of something that is a little confronting, maybe a little difficult for us. I like the idea of letting go of our outcomes orientation on this. Sometimes I can get really paralyzed by the size and scope of the problem. I can get overwhelmed and fearful. And I have to really let go of any concept that this is going to get done and dusted in my lifetime. Like, we're going to solve it or we're going to blow it all up. Done. I have to really let go of that and just know, no, my work here is to take my own next steps and make my own decisions. And almost every time, the things that are supportive for my health and well-being are also supportive on this broader level. Very rarely. I can't, right now, in this moment, I can't think of any places that conflicts. That what's truly good for this individual is good for the community as well. Well, it's because we're like trees. You know, it's good for all of us, some things. And I think the other part that we need to remember and bring in is gratitude and celebration and really digging deep into the ways we can make communities to help support us. When one of the trees in a particular community of trees dies, the other trees feel it, and they'll sometimes, you know, some of them will die as well, even if they were previously healthy trees, or they'll show, you know, whatever, different kinds of damage signals on the side where they lost the tree. You know, it's hurtful to them. And likewise, when there's health and well-being in that community, then all are well. And this is what we do for each other when we show up in communities that are meaningful to us and practice together. There's that sense of safety and familiarity, and we're communicating around things that really, really matter to us. And we're filling ourselves up in this sense of, I'm not in it alone. I'm not disconnected and isolated. There is a place I can turn and find others who care about some of the things I care about. And we need those moments of connection when our little mycorrhizal filaments kind of communicate, because then we do go out into this big, bad concrete jungle and have to continue to find ways to thrive and connect. And you know what? There's heaps of nature here, right here in Brisbane, so I really like that about this city. You know, I get to run along the river or into the botanical garden, you know, almost every day. There's flowers falling from those trees every day. It's so lovely. There was probably heaps of lovely nature in that other city that I was living in some years ago, too. I just couldn't see it at the time. I just couldn't see it. So the invitation for us tonight and going into tomorrow, it's to go out and, you know, see and find those places of connection, those places where we connect and communicate and can share with other beings, including nature. I have a poem, a short poem by Robert Aitken, a Zen poet, who wrote, "Looking up at the sky, I vow with all beings to remember this infinite ceiling in every room of my life. When I stroll around in the city, I vow with all beings to notice how lichen and grasses never give up in despair. With resources scarcer and scarcer, I vow with all beings to consider the law of proportion. My have is another's have not." So, thank you for your attention tonight. Thank you for coming together in community to practice. And now, if you will...